Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Today, I'm really excited because we have our first ever guest on the show, and we've got a really juicy conversation to have on the topic of reducing alcohol in midlife without losing your identity or friendship. But before we dive in and before I introduce our fabulous guest, I want to briefly acknowledge why alcohol feels so different in our 40s. Because for lots of women, their body starts to ask for something different. And that was my story, possibly our guest stories, which we'll hear as we go through. Because as estrogen fluctuates, it starts to affect our liver detox pathways, which is, of course, how we process alcohol. It affects our brain chemistry and how resilient our nervous system feels. And the result can be that alcohol can start to hit harder, linger longer, and disrupt things more than, like, way more than it ever used to. What once felt relaxing, say a glass of wine, can now start to result in 3 a.m. wake ups with a racing heart, hot flushes, anxiety the next day, and even lingering on further through the week, brain fog the next day and lingering. And alcohol suppresses our REM sleep, which is that restorative state of sleep. It stresses the nervous system. It adds an extra load to the liver that's already working hard to clear other toxins, plus to clear and rebalance our estrogen. And in a time of shifting metabolism and more sensitive blood sugar patterns, the ripple effects are much bigger in midlife. So if you've noticed alcohol doesn't work for you the way it used to, that is your physiology. It's not a sort of failure. And that's exactly why this conversation matters today. And I can't wait to dive in with our guest. So we've got Denise Hamilton-Mace. She is a mindful drinking mentor, podcaster, and writer at Mindful Drinking and Moderation in Midlife. After a 24-year career in hospitality, where daily drinking was the norm, Denise began to realize in her early 40s that alcohol wasn't serving her anymore. And she went on to become a leading voice in the low and no alcohol space through her writing, public speaking, and her podcast. So now she helps adults in midlife change the way they allow alcohol to show up in their lives on their own terms, without judgment, and also without the expectation to quit, which I think is an important nuance there that we can talk about today as well. So welcome, Denise. It's really great to have you here. Thank you so much for your time.
Hi, Francesca. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Great. I think our listeners are going to love this conversation.
I hope so.
I'm sure they will. So I'd love to start with, if we're thinking about the woman listening to this who knows that alcohol isn't really serving her anymore, but feels scared about what that might mean, what do you see come up most often in midlife when women start questioning their drinking?
Oh, it's such a big area. So we're all different, right? You know, and everybody's got their own stories and their own journeys that have led them to where they are. But there are certain similarities that we all have when it comes to our physiology. There are some things just we're made pretty much the same way. Mm. And when we're young and we're invincible and we are going out for 3-4 nights in a row till 3 a.m., yeah, getting up the next morning, if we've been asleep, going for yeah, an 8-hour shift in the pub or the office that we're working in, you know, we throw a bit of McDonald's down our throat or whatever it is and gear up and do it all over again. Mm. And yeah, you feel a little bit rubbish, but you can do it, right? You can keep yeah, going. And it's fun.
And it's worth it.
And it's totally worth it. The wild nights, the stories. And look, we've all done it. And we all had a great time. Also all had some not so great times, you know, there was good and bad in all of it. But what happens, I think, is that as we get a little bit older, we tend to look back with these sort of rose-tinted spectacles at all the fun that we had and all the ways that we used to do it and keep thinking, well, I'm still that person. You know, I can still go out. I still like a party. Yeah, I've got the kids at home, or yeah, I've got a job, but yeah, I can tie one on. And the fact of the matter is that as we age, alcohol hits us differently.
Yeah.
It just impacts us differently. And you said a perfect thing. You know, it's not a failure. This is not your body letting you down. This is not you being unable to be cool and hang out. It's just life. It's just nature. You know, it's aging, and we need to embrace it. And we need to love it because there's nothing wrong with aging. It is a gift and we should be glad that we get to do it. But we should also recognize that that means that we can't drink the way that we used to. That doesn't mean that we can't drink at all if we still want to, but it does mean that we might need to just take a look at how we allow alcohol to have a role in our life, what we want that to look like, and how we can make choices that are going to serve us better in the long run.
Yes, exactly. And you said you help midlife adults do things on their own terms. I think that's a really key thing. And I hear from a lot of friends, clients, and my own story as well, when I decided to reduce my alcohol intake, was that kind of peer pressure or feeling like you should go, you can't just suddenly go out with those same people and say you're not drinking or you're having less or you don't want to go there anymore, you'd prefer to do something different, because that feels like scary to sort of start saying that to those people and what might they think. So I think own terms is really important. I think that's where I see a lot of people struggle with that.
It's a really important part of what I talk about for me. I repeat the same sort of things over and over again because I want the message to get through, just like you do when you're talking about certain elements of how we deal with perimenopause. You know, we need to remember that these things are happening outside of our control. But we do have some element of control about how we react to what's going on. And when it comes to drinking, the control that we have is how we react to or respond to other people's feelings about the way we decide to change our drinking. Because everybody has an opinion.
Yes.
And that's lovely. I'm very happy for you. I'm glad you've got an opinion. But your opinion doesn't necessarily have to have any impact on my choices and what I want to do. The other part of the own terms messaging for me is that quite often when we look at or we start looking at the way we drink, a lot of the messaging out there is if you're thinking about your drinking, then it's because you've got a problem. If you're trying to cut back, it's because you're drinking too much. And this was very much the message that I was getting when I first started my journey. And actually, I didn't start cutting back because of addiction or alcohol use disorder or anything like that. Mine was a choice because I recognized that alcohol was having more negative than positive impacts. It always has negative and positive from day one.
Yes.
You know, that's not new. But, you know, the scales weren't balancing for me anymore. And I didn't want to be bombarded with, when I'm looking for alcohol-free drinks, I didn't want the message to also be, do you need to go and speak to someone? But no, I just want to drink less. I just want to drink with less alcohol in it that tastes good. And that's kind of why I started doing what I do, is to help people recognize that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You don't have to be in a state of alcohol use disorder, which is what we used to call alcoholism. We now refer to it as alcohol use disorder. Of course, you can use whatever language you want.
I never knew that.
Yeah. So, but we don't have to be there. We don't have to be, as the people like to say, you know, pouring vodka on your cornflakes.
Yes.
It's not about
get that far. Yeah.
No. You don't have to wait for a rock bottom. You can make positive choices for your life, and it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Either, you know, it's not that, oh, alcohol's not really working for me, so I'm never going to drink again. Actually, most people want to moderate. They want to drink mindfully. They want to just drink less, but allow it to be a choice that they make rather than, say, an automation or a habit that they're just falling in that path of.
Yeah, I think that's what the big differentiation is, and that's what I sort of say to clients, because there are a lot of health experts out there that will say, particularly as we get to 40s and start moving through perimenopause and into menopause, that we should not be drinking any alcohol at all, that it's just not working, it's not our friend anymore. And whilst there can be some truth in that, if somebody wanted to literally never ever drink again, that's fine. But there's also truth in moderation. You know, it's always about how much are you drinking now versus how much would be more ideal for you to still drink, but also look after your hormone health as you move through this really rocky time of perimenopause and get to menopause and enjoy your life after that. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. And I love that about your message, you know, that's exactly it. What can we just do to start being more mindful? Could it, you know, rather than just letting somebody top up your glass for the sake of it, or oh, I'm happy, you know, someone's getting another round. So you just say, yeah, okay, then, because you're in the rounds thing. I've heard that a lot. Oh, but we're doing rounds and it, like, I owed my round, or I owe them a round. So then you just end up having 7 drinks on an evening when you would have been more than happy to have 2 or 3 and end it there. But you've ended up having more than that because of sort of conforming, I guess, to what's on around you. So yeah, I really like that message that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And I hope I never give that message out, because that isn't what it has to be. I personally chose to stop drinking completely after a while of moderation. And that's just where I naturally went. But I wasn't planning to go there. And it's not something that I say other people should or, you know, have to do. So I really like that message. Was that your story then? You wanted to, did you just decide you wanted to moderate? Did you ever think, I don't want to drink at all?
No, never. No. So I come from a hospitality background. So I spent 24 years working in pubs, bars, clubs, restaurants, race courses, you name it, pretty much everything I've done it. And so drinking for me was a daily activity, and it was normal. You know, people often talk about my career, you know, there's a lot of drinking in media or in politics or whatever. I worked in bars.
Yeah.
And as I moved up through the ranks and I became the boss, you know, that it was my stock. I could do what I wanted with it, you know. And there were times that I did drink damagingly, absolutely. And I partied hard as well. You know, I worked in the West End for a long time, so drinking often led to other things. But for me, when the change came about for me to start drinking differently, it wasn't a case of me doing that, you know, that, what's that Sunday morning thing where we wake up and go, oh my God, I'm never drinking again.
Yeah.
We've all said that 1,000 times.
Until Friday.
Sticks.
Yeah.
And the other thing for me as well, I didn't have Fridays. I didn't have weekends. Because I worked in hospitality, you know, we'd go out on a Tuesday or Wednesday because Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we were working.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'd have drinks after work, but we'd be working till 11, 12, 2 in the morning. But Tuesday, Wednesday night, we knew all the bars that you could go to late and have a drink. So anyway, I did that for a really long time. And then I moved up in my career into events. In my last role, I was working in events. And so I came out from behind the bar. I wasn't running a venue anymore. And I got, COVID hit, and I was on maternity leave at the time with my daughter. She's now 6 years old. And I got made redundant. Rather unceremoniously, but it happened to a lot of us during that time, so it's fine. And I knew that I didn't want to go back into hospitality again, because the drinking and the socializing with 2 small kids at home, and we had to protect my husband's job, so I had to make sure that he could, you know, go and bring home the bacon, as they say. And so I took a bit of time out and decided to start looking after myself a little bit more whilst looking after the kids. Long story short, we watched this documentary called Game Changers, which is about vegan athletes. And we decided to try going vegan for 6 months, which was fascinating, really hard. But what happened was I took out all the bad things in my diet and that I was putting into my body. And I began to realize that the only times I felt really bad were after I'd had a drink. But it wasn't like a hangover. It was 3 days later, I'd still be feeling subpar. I'd still be operating at 60, 70, 80% of my capacity.
Yeah.
And so I realized that I wanted to start drinking less, and I never, ever wanted to give up completely. My personal goal was, I said to myself that I never, ever, ever, ever want to have a hangover ever again.
Yes, that was my goal when I first stopped or moderated. It was the hangover.
It's the hangovers, and they are, I mean, I used to have, when I went out, I had really bad hangovers. Like, I could be sick for 24 hours being physically sick because I battered my body. But even when I just had casual nights out, where you just go for a couple of cocktails with your bestie, you know, I was just feeling so rubbish for so many days afterwards. I was like, I don't want that, because it's just stopping me from doing everything else. And it was really affecting my mood.
Yeah.
And I remember one time snapping at my little boy, and he'd done nothing wrong. He was just chatting and jabbering away, as kids do, being annoying, but no more than usual. And I remember snapping at him and the look on his face, and he was so mortified. And I knew at that moment it wasn't because of him. It was because I was feeling so crappy because of the drinks that I'd had. And I was like, well, that to me is a hangover that I just don't need in my life anymore. And so, yeah, so that was my goal. And I went from, you mentioned something I thought was really interesting, going from moderation to just drinking less. So I refer to it as sort of active moderation and passive moderation. And active moderation is those things like your dry January, your sober October, zebra striping and bookending. And we can talk about those terms if you want to dive into those. But it's where you're setting yourself a rule or, you know, a guideline perhaps. Right. Whereas I went from that and I moved into what I call more passive moderation now, where it has just become a part of who I am. It's become something that I've accepted, that I can now take it or leave it when it comes to alcohol. Mm. But I've realized that I prefer to leave it far more often than I would ever take it, because actually, as I've gone along, the things that I used to get out of it, I'm just not getting anymore. So that's not worth the cost to me. And I think that's that passive moderation stage that most people are trying to get to, that they want to be able to just, as you say, when there's the rounds going, go, okay, well, you might be doing rounds, but actually I don't fancy one, so I'm going to sit this one out. Or I will do rounds, but I'm getting an alcohol-free drink. And I don't have to perform my drinking to make you happy.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the key one. I definitely feel that that's where I struggled at first. Because for me, it was the same as you. It was like, I just want to, I'm starting to notice that I'm just not feeling good when I have a drink. And then for me, there was that icing on the cake. It was my partner's 40th that I'd spent so much money and time on organizing for him. And then when we got home, I was really sick and, you know, vomiting, and I thought, this is ridiculous. And then when I woke up the next day, there were so many parts of the night I didn't remember, conversations with really important people, like family members. And I was just gutted. I thought, that is, like, come on, this is not how I want things to be when I drink. So for me, it was, all right, I'm going to moderate. I'm never going to have a hangover again. Mm-hmm. And I'm never going to be drunk again. That's what I said.
Okay.
I'm not going to stop drinking. I'm just never going to be drunk again. And great. I never, ever have been drunk ever since. But then by accident, like you were saying, I was saying to myself, I can drink and I will drink tonight or at home if I want to. And it just became, over time, it just became more common that I just didn't want to. But I was allowing myself to. There'd be a bottle of red wine there with a meal, or we'd go out and, you know, my partner would say, what do you want? And I'd think, do I want that gin and tonic that I do, my refreshing G&T with lime? Mm-hmm. And half the time I just say, I just want the sparkling water with lime. Ask for lots of lime juice. I used to say, loads of lime juice, and give me a nice tall glass. And that was fine. And then we started to go on holiday, and I started to never even have a drink on holiday, but still have the most amazing time, if not much better, because I never felt rubbish during the days. Mm-hmm. And that's what, for me, I thought, it's just, this was worth it before. Not only was it worth it before, but I also didn't feel as bad.
Exactly.
Because I was just younger and my physiology was able to handle it. And then, and now I'm not, you know, I'm far more sensitive to it, but I actually just feel much better without it. So it was kind of like that accident. But I think, one of the biggest things I did struggle with for a while when we were social, because my partner was so supportive and most of my friends were, but some of them and family members just didn't understand it. You know, they'd say, why, live a little, come on, just have another one. What's wrong with you? I used to get, because I'm half Irish. So I'd get the Irish side of my family saying, what's wrong with you? You come into Ireland and you're not having a drink. Or they'd think I was unwell or I must be pregnant. They could not get their head around it. So it was that, you know, just sort of just being really confident to say, I'm fine, and just keep laughing with them rather than getting annoyed. Because sometimes I'd want to get annoyed. I'd feel defensive. Like, just leave me alone. But it was kind of learning how to navigate that. And I think that's where a lot of people do struggle with, what do I do? Who am I if I am not the drinker? Because people would say to me, oh, you've changed. And I was fine with that, but clearly they weren't. But then it makes you feel a certain, like, oh, so do people think I'm just boring? I went through that for a while. Okay. People must think I'm boring. I'm absolutely past that now. But I think that's part of the identity shift.
I think there is a lot of mindful drinking and sober curiosity and moderating and whichever terms people are using. There's a lot of practical advice out there, but a lot of it is about the identity shift, and it's about how we think about ourselves, how we think about ourselves as a member of our social circle, as a member of our family. It's about the value that we believe that we hold and share within ourselves and within our peer groups. you know, I write a lot about the identity elements of this change, because actually for most people, the one of the struggles is that, am I, because if I drink less, am I less of who I am? Am I less me? Am I less of a person? Am I less valuable? Am I less funny or entertaining? Or, you know, perhaps if you're single, am I less attractive? You know, will I be able to flirt? Am I, you know, all of these things. Yeah. And we don't realize that alcohol is tied up in so much about who we are. I mean, you talk about your family being, you being half Irish. My family is from Jamaica. Those are two very big drinking cultures, but we live in the biggest drinking culture here in the UK. It is just massive. It is from birth, death, marriages, and everything in between is marked with a drink in your hand. Mm-hmm. And so when you start drinking differently, sometimes the biggest challenges are other people's issues with it and them questioning you, and either the peer pressure or the genuinely not understanding. And so I think what's really important is to recognize that whilst this is your decision and people need to make the decision that is best for them, it is a selfish decision, but it's selfish in the best possible way, because in the long term, it's going to benefit you. It's going to benefit your friends, your family, the people that you care about. But they are going to be selfish as well, because they know you as their drinking partner. You may have got years and years of friendship. Once we reach midlife, you know, our friendships are pretty much embedded, solid. You know, it's very hard making new friends when you're in your 40s, because you're like setting ways, aren't you?
Very true.
And you know, for me, one of the examples I often give is my relationship. So my husband and I met when we both worked in bars, same company, different venues. Our entire relationship was built on drinking, on going out for cocktails, making each other drinks. You know, it was the sort of language that we used in the beginning to show who we were. And so when I started changing the way that I drink, I was nervous. I was definitely nervous. My best friend as well, he was the man of honor at my wedding. His and I's relationship was also built on alcohol. And I thought, when I start telling these people, you know, what's the response going to be? And it is, I think, really important that we understand that other people need to get their heads around what we're doing as well. You'll get a couple of different types of responses, and quite a really good thing is that I've noticed that a lot of people, when I've done like surveys on my Substack and I've said, you know, how do people respond, the majority of people now are responding more positively. They're finding that their friends are being more supportive, but there will be some who will be like, well, what is wrong with you, or come on, you're supposed to, or it's rude not to. And I always say to people, then you've got two choices. You can either stand your ground, get into a big debate with somebody, tell them all the reasons why drinking is bad for you or for them. You can talk about the 7 types of cancer. You can talk about the WHO, the World Health Organization advice that no amount of alcohol is safe. Or you can say, you've got a good point, but I'm really happy with this. Yes. Enjoy yourself. I'll see you later.
Exactly. I love
What's
that.
What's easier? You know, I don't have time in my life to convince other people that the choices I'm making for myself are correct. Yeah. If you love me and you care about me and you want to support me, then you will support that decision no matter what it does for you, because it's a positive decision. And your real friends will find ways to spend time together. There are other things that we can do as human beings other than get absolutely smashed.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean that I never go to the pub. I love a pub. I grew up in pubs. I absolutely love going to the pub, but I want to drink something alcohol free when I'm there.
Yeah.
Or perhaps we want to go and do a different activity. Yeah, we can go for a coffee and go for a walk. It's not the most exciting things in the world, but we can do other activities. We can go to other bars. We can go and see a show. We can go for dinner. You can still do all the things that you did before. You're just going to remember them better.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's, you know, like you said, you threw this amazing, wonderful party and you don't remember it.
Yeah.
And you spent time and money and effort. And that's one of the costs to me that is not worth the time that you spent getting drunk. Now,
exactly.
That's not to say that you're never going to have a drink again. That's not to say that you know, like I said before, it's not about all or nothing, but the mindful drinking element is about making that choice and just saying, and I don't mean like every single drink you got to weigh up a pros and cons list, because that would be really dull, but just making a conscious choice as to whether the action that you are taking, whether it's about alcohol or anything else, is going to serve you well enough to be worth the consequences that you'll have to deal with the next day. And if it is, go for it. If you've got nothing on tomorrow and you can spend the day sat on the sofa watching Netflix and you're happy with spending your time like that, then that's entirely up to you. We're all adults. We can make our own choice. But actually, if you'd rather do something else, if you'd rather go somewhere, you'd rather or still sit on the sofa but not be hanging.
Yeah.
Then you can have, and there are options out there. You can have an alcohol-free drink, a gin, a rum, a wine, a beer. Mm. You know, there's, it's not like 10, 20 years ago when you had no other choice. We've got options now.
A lot more, I think, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's just that natural progression, isn't it? Making, even if it's the mindful choice of, is this worth it for how I'm going to feel tomorrow? But then there's also understanding your threshold, I think. So what I started to realize was if I have one drink, which was for me, it would have been a vodka and tonic or a gin and tonic. Those were my drinks. And I worked out over time after that point where I said, I never want to be drunk again. I'm never going to be hungover again, but I'm still going to drink when and if I want to. I figured out what my threshold was for me not to feel rubbish. And also I figured out the things where the threshold was the number of drinks, but also it had to be on a full stomach, you know, after an actual meal, not on an empty stomach. There were times in the day I figured out where it worked and it didn't work, even one drink. I found that if I had one drink, I mean, it works differently for different people. But for me, if I was having that one or two drinks after, like in the evening, it was much easier, funnily enough, than if I tried to do that during the day. Because there was a lot of, you know, brunches and things like that. And I found my day drinking, even if it was one or two, just knocked me for six. But if I had it a bit like 5 o'clock or just after dinner or something, it didn't do that to me. So I spent some time figuring all of that out. And then eventually, and knowing that if I had a third drink, I would pay for it the next day, even if I wasn't drunk. I was still not getting drunk, which is what I really wanted. But I knew that that third drink would just make me feel rubbish the next day. So there was never a third one.
Yeah.
And then it just gradually became none.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think you've got to know yourself. It's really important. But that one of the joys, I think, one of the beauties of midlife is that you do know yourself better.
Yeah.
I know myself better now in my 40s than I ever did in my 20s.
Same.
And drinking less is part of that as well, because you have more clarity. You can actually spend time with yourself and know what you think and feel rather than just reacting to stuff. But I think that's a really interesting point about sort of knowing the time of day or the type of drink, because that's a really big part of it, because we can't drink the way that we used to. You know, I used to love an old fashioned, which for anyone who doesn't know, is basically just bourbon in a glass. It's like a bourbon martini. You stir it with some ice and some sugar and some angostura bitters. It's very strong. I couldn't possibly drink it now. It's just knocked me for six. But you know, for example, as we age, as I know you'll know, you know, your body composition is completely different. And then especially for women as well, because the way that our bodies are made up, all the stuff we're going through. So I'm in the throes of perimenopause myself at the moment. And as I've mentioned to you before, you know, I'm all over the place with everything from the brain fog to the temperature and all that sort of stuff. But there's things that we don't recognize that alcohol is doing within our bodies that is impacting all of that, which is why it impacts our perimenopause symptoms, but also impacts the way we can drink. So for example, we have less water in our body when we're 40, 50 years old. We've got about 10% less water than we did when we were in our 20s. Now, that might not sound like a lot, but what that means is because alcohol is spread throughout the body, through your water systems, into your organs, if you have less water in your body, the concentration of alcohol in your system for every sip is higher. So I say, think of it like making a squash, you know, or a Ribena or a cordial. Other squashes are available. You know, if you have the same amount of water, but you put twice the amount of squash in it, it's going to be a stronger, sweeter drink. And it's the same with our bodies, the same with alcohol. So there's a lot of these things that change as we age that we really need to be more mindful of, to be more aware of, to pay attention to, that impact the way that we can or can't drink. And so I think that's a really big part of mindful drinking, is it's not just about, like I said, if I have this drink, can I have another one? Or, you know, I had one yesterday, should I have one today? It's not about that.
Yeah.
It's more about recognizing the impact on your life as a whole.
As a whole, yeah.
You know, this holistic impact on my energy, my cognition, my memory, my skin, all of these things, and weighing that up, rather than just, oh, I had one this afternoon, can I have another one?
So it's less about policing yourself on and rules around what, how many you can have and what you shouldn't do. It's more about just being really in tune with your own body and your symptoms and how you're affected.
Absolutely. I mean, look, the rules work for some people. And they do. I've got two kids, Logan and Isla. Logan loves a rule. He likes to know what he's supposed to be doing, when he's supposed to be doing it. Isla, she's me. It's not interesting. She makes up her own rules, does her own thing. And so the same for adults, as we talk about our drinking. Some people do work better with structured systems. So things like Dry January, where the rule is very simple. You don't drink for a month, or any month-long break that you take. Other rules that people can look at are things like zebra striping, which is alternating between an alcohol full drink and an alcohol free drink on your night out. There's things like bookending, which is starting and ending your night with an alcohol free drink, but drinking alcohol in the middle.
In between.
There's pacing, where you would limit yourself to only one alcohol drink per hour, with the idea there that it gives your body time to process the alcohol. Because I'm not into the fear-mongering side of things, but the fact is that alcohol is a toxin to the body. So what happens is, as soon as you consume alcohol, your body stops doing everything else and focuses all its energy on processing that alcohol and getting it out of your system. And it can process about one unit per hour, which is why when you have lots of drinks, you still feel drunk in the morning and you're not supposed to drive. So if you pace yourself to only one drink per hour, that gives your body a chance to do what it needs to do. And obviously in between, the idea is that you'd have some water. So there are different types of rules. And then there's things that people set themselves. Some people say things like, right, I'll only ever drink on the weekends, not on the weeknights. Or vice versa, depending on how your social schedule works. Some people do things like never on two consecutive days, or only with a meal. So there are lots of ways that people can approach this. And I do encourage everybody to do a bit of trial and error and figure out what works for you. Because I can be pretty sure that the way that you went about changing your drinking, Francesca, would have been different to the way that I did it, would have been different to the way that other people do it, which is absolutely fine. But yes, after we've looked at these rules, the idea is that we don't want to live like that all the time. You don't want in 5 years' time to still be counting your drinks. That's just miserable. Nobody wants to do that. So that's where the mindfulness part comes in. So, you know, the rules bit, that's the moderation. The moderation is like the how, but the mindfulness is the why. And once you start to understand your whys and looking at the bigger picture and your beliefs around alcohol and how it shows up in your life, that's when things really start to shift. That's when the change really starts to happen. Because once you come to understand what alcohol does when you have it to you and the goals that you have set for yourself, and you started to change your beliefs around the type of person I am in social circles, when you start to understand that you still have value and you're still funny and you're still flirty and you're still clever and witty, even if you're drinking alcohol free for the night, once those beliefs start to embed, then it becomes a lot easier to make this more of a way of life rather than a checkbox that you have to fill in every night. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think that I resonate with that. And I think that's, it's initially where I was people pleasing so much. And the next day I'd say, oh, I had more drinks than I had wanted to. And I'd almost like be kicking myself. But that very, very gradually just changed and changed and changed over time. So I kept saying, it's okay, we'll just keep trying. And it was all about that until I could prove to myself that I was still fun. I was still funny. I still had lots to say. I still had the same, confidence, even though I wasn't drunk and I wasn't drinking. then the people pleasing element started to become easier as well, and less and less. And understanding as well, this is about them, you know, I'm allowing this to be about other people rather than really focusing on myself. What do I need? And like that comment that you said earlier, you could stand there and try and explain yourself and explain why you're doing this and make all these excuses. Because I used to think of things in my head, what could I say as to the reason that I'm doing this so that this person backs off? You know, I could say something so profound that they just leave me alone. Or I could just, which is what I started to do, say, you enjoy your drink and I'll enjoy whatever this is. And, you know, have a good night. And just that's it.
And I think, you know, you said the word there, confidence, you know, when you start drinking differently, in the beginning, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that this is all perfectly easy. You know, it's a change, and it's a change of decades of habit, which is really hard to break. But once you start to see the light through that, then actually your confidence, which is one of the things that people worry about, your confidence improves, because you can be confident in who you are. You can be confident in what you can do and what you did last night, and what, you know, you can know without any uncertainty that you didn't send that text message to that person who's like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. You know, all of that stuff. And you also then will have the confidence to just say no thanks, and know that no thanks is a complete sentence.
It's a complete sentence, exactly.
No,
yeah. And when there's that pushback, which is why I had in Ireland, come on, go on, are you sure? Why? But why? Are you sure? Is there something wrong? That you can just continue to say, no, honestly, I'm fine, and keep calm, and eventually the questioning will stop.
Keep eventually, you know, and I say this with all the love in the world, but you're not that interesting. Eventually people will just move on. They will, you know, and the more that we fight it, and the more that we push against it, and the more that we defend our position and we start, you know, sharing stats and excuses and things. That's why I hate those posts that are like 10 excuses that you can have for not drinking. It's like, no. If you are with people who you care about, you tell them the truth and you say, I've got a work thing coming up, or I've got to take the kids, or it's been feeling really crappy lately, or whatever it is, you can be honest. If it's some random person who, you know, I remember having somebody, I was ordering a drink at a pub once, and this guy decided to pipe up because it was an alcohol-free drink. And to be fair, he said stuff that I would have said to people in the past, you know, like, what's the point? I was like, okay, but I didn't ask you.
You're so not drinking it.
Yeah, you don't have to have it. It's fine. So, you know, I think it's just, we need to recognize that we have to stand in our power to make these changes, and no one else can do it for us, right? And everybody else who is might be giving you any pressure, if you are feeling peer pressure from anyone, you know, how is their peer pressure going to help your life? We've got to try to look beyond this very moment, beyond this conversation that we're having, and to the fact that in about 2 minutes time this person will go on and talk about something else, and I can be left standing here with a drink or without a drink. Which one is going to be better for me? And if all else fails, change the subject. People love talking about themselves. Just ask them a question about themselves.
That's one of my powers, actually, is just, anyway, how are you, what have you been up to? It works every time.
How's the project? How's the kids? I love your shoes. Where'd you get those from? Or did you see that thing on the, whatever it is, you know, change the subject. You're not that interesting. People will eventually move on. And if someone really, really doesn't get it, then that's their loss. You know, you can't allow somebody else's ignorance. And I don't say that in a horrible way. Just ignorance just means not knowing.
Yeah.
Somebody else's not knowing to impact your quality of life.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's a really powerful place to finish. I really do. I think it took me a while to learn that. But once you're there, you're there. Mm-hmm. And however long it takes is fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. This has been really, I think it would be really helpful for people to start sort of reframing things and seeing, just reevaluating. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful. I do hope it helps people.
I'm sure it will. And where can people find you if there's, I know you've got a 4-week mindful drinking reset. Is that right? That people can get?
I do. Yes. Yeah. So I created a program. It's a 4-week midlife mindful drinking reset. And so it is created to take people through a week by week journey. We look at things like your awareness around your drinking habits, We then look at your boundary setting and social interactions. Then week three, we look at health and stress management. And then in week four, we put it all together to help make a forward plan for your life, because it's important that at the end of one of these things that you have a plan for how you want things to look going forward.
Yeah.
So you can find that and my Substack and everything else at the website, which is lownodrinker.com. But as you're on a podcast, the best thing to do is, once you have finished listening to this fabulous show, is to go and search Mindful Drinking and Moderation in Midlife, where you can find my pod. And thank you, Francesca, because I think that what you're doing is so important. As somebody going through perimenopause who had to figure it all out by herself, had no idea what was going on, it's been a godsend to find a show like yours that actually helps me to get my head around all the changes that are going on inside my body. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And I definitely highly recommend your podcast. Definitely go out and listen to that. I will link everything that you've talked about in in the show notes as well, because I think the Mindful Reset sounds amazing. If you're considering, you know, if you're ready, you're considering even just some sort of reduction, I think that'd be really helpful. And your Amazing. Substack is obviously really popular as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I love writing on Substack. I used to produce a magazine, but actually I really enjoy doing the writing. So I write a lot about identity, about changing your drinking habits, about different ways that you can approach things. And really my goal there is, as with the podcast, is to help empower people to feel more confident in their choices to drink differently on their own terms.
I love that. So really helpful stuff, guys, in the show notes. I'll have all the links. Thank you so much, Denise.
Thank you.
Bye. If you enjoyed this episode, come and join me inside the Midlife Thrive membership. It's where I share my best resources, deeper education and coaching support to help you navigate perimenopause and beyond with clarity and confidence. Head to francescaliparotti.com/midlife-thrive-membership or check the link in the show notes, and I'll look forward to welcoming you into the community.